Chapter 16, Point of Impact. This time, the materialization was a painful process. Being separated from 1,000 consciousnesses left Artemis with a deep sense of loss. For the first time in his life, he had completely belonged. He knew everyone, and they knew him. There would always be a bond between them all, though the specifics of others' memories were already fading. Artemis felt like an adhesive plaster that had been ripped off an enormous limb and flung on the ground. He lay on the earth, shivering. Sharing consciousness had felt so right that now it was as if he had just lost the use of several senses, including balance. He opened his eyes, squinting through the sunlight. Sunlight. They were on Earth, though where and when remained to be seen. Artemis rolled onto his stomach, then struggled slowly to all fours. The others lay in the crater, disorientated like him, but alive, judging by the moans and groans. He himself felt fine, except for a darting pain in his left eye. His vision was sharp, but slightly yellowed, as though he were wearing pale sunglasses. Holly, the soldier, was already on her feet, coughing the ash from her lungs. When her airways were clear, she helped Artemis to his feet. She winked at Artemis. Blue sky, we did it. Artemis nodded. Perhaps. The wink drew his attention to her left eye. It seemed as though they hadn't made it through the tunnel unaltered. Look at me, Holly. Do you notice anything different? This isn't anything to do with puberty, is it? Said Holly, smiling. Then she noticed. Your eyes. They've changed. One blue and one hazel. Artemis smiled. You too. We've swapped in transit. Just the eye, as far as I can make out. Holly thought about this for a moment, then ran her hands over her head and body. Everything's in place, thank goodness. Except now I have a human eye. It could have been a lot worse, said Artemis. You could have been travelling with mulch. Holly winced. Now that you mention it. A solitary blue dot of magic sparkled inside Holly's new eyeball, reducing it in size slightly. That's better, she sighed. I had a blinder of a headache. Your new eye must be too small. Why don't you use your ill-gotten magic to fix it? Artemis tried, closed his eyes and concentrated, but nothing happened. It seems as though the transplant did not take. I must have used all I had in the tunnel. Holly punched his shoulder lightly. Maybe you passed it on to me. I feel great. That time tunnel was like a magical mud bath. Maybe it's just as well that you lost your magic. The last thing the people need is a magical criminal mastermind running around above ground. A pity, sighed Artemis. The possibilities were endless. Here, said Holly, taking his head in her hands. Let me fix you up. Her fingertip glowed blue, and Artemis felt his new eye expand slightly in his socket. A single tear ran down his cheek, and the headache disappeared. A pity I was unable to do it myself. Being magical, even for a short while, was simply magical? Artemis smiled. Exactly. Thank you, Holly. Holly smiled back. It's the least I can do for someone who brought me back to life. Quan and Number One were on their feet. The old warlock was trying not to look too smug, and Number One was wiggling his tail experimentally. You never know what that tunnel will do to you, he explained. I lost half a finger last time. It was my favourite finger, too.
Rarely in my tunnels, said Quan. My tunnels are works of beauty. If the other warlocks were alive, they would give me a medal. Where is Quefor, by the way?
Quefor was buried up to his waist in an ash mound, head down. Quan and Number One hauled him out by the boots. He lay spluttering and snorting on the ground. Do you need a handkerchief? Asked Number One. All that ash and mucus coming out of your nose is horrible. Quefor wiped his eyes with the back of his hand.
Shut up, runt!
Number One took a step backwards, which would prove not to be quite enough.
Runt! He squeaked. You're not Quefor! You're N'Zal!
Abbott! Roared the demon, reaching up and grasping Number One by the throat. The name is Abbott!
Holly had her gun out and powered up before Abbott finished his sentence. Let him go, Abbott! She shouted. You can't escape. There's nowhere to escape to. Your world is gone. The ex-Pride leader was actually crying.
I know. It's gone. This runt took it from me. Now I will take his life from him.
Holly sent a warning shot over Abbott's head. The next one is between your eyes, demon, Abbott hefted number one, using him as a shield. Shoot now, elf! Put us both out of our misery! A change had come over number one. Initially, he had been snivelling. Standard number one behaviour. But now the tears were drying on his cheeks, and his eyes were hard. Every time things are going right for me, Abbott ruins it, he thought. I am so fed up of this demon, I wish he was gone. This was a big breakthrough for number one. Usually when he found himself in a bad situation, number one wished himself away. This time he was wishing someone else would disappear. Enough was finally enough. So number one broke through a lifetime of conditioning and talked back to Abbott.
I want to speak to Quefor, he said in a trembling voice.
Quefor's gone, shouted Abbott, spraying spittle on number one's neck. All that is left is his magic, my magic.
I want to speak to Quefor, repeated his hostage with a little more volume.
For Abbott, this latest insubordination was the wind that burst the dwarf's bum flap. Even though he was bereft of land and lackeys, Abbott decided he would not bear impudence from an imp. He tossed number one upwards, spinning him in the air and gripping his shoulders as the imp descended. Number one came down face to face with Abbott, the demon's horns brushing his ears. Abbott's eyes were wide and crazy and his teeth were slick with saliva. You're not long for life, little runt. If Abbott had been paying closer attention to his captive, he might have noticed that number one's eyes were filmed with blue, and his markings glowed and shimmered. But, as usual, Abbott was only interested in his own plight. Number one wriggled his hands upwards, grabbing Abbott by the horns.
How dare you! Said Abbott, incredulously.
Touching a demon's horns was tantamount to a challenge. Number one stared into his captor's eyes.
I said I want to talk to Quefor.
Abbott heard him that time, because the voice wasn't number one's. It was the voice of pure magic, layered with undeniable power. Abbott blinked.
I'll see if he's in.
It was too late for compliance. Number one wasn't about to rein in his power now. He sent a magical probe into Abbott's brain via the horns. The horns glowed bright blue and then began shedding large, brittle flakes.
Careful with the horns, said Abbott, blearily.
Then his eyes rolled back in his head.
The ladies love the horns.
Number one rooted round in Abbott's head for a while until he found Quefor sleeping in a dark corner, in a place scientists would call the limbic system.
The problem, realised number one, is that there is only room in every head for one consciousness. Abbott needs to go somewhere else.
And so, with this instinctive knowledge and absolutely no expertise, number one fed Quefor's consciousness until it expanded, occupying the entire brain. It was not a perfect fit, and poor Quefor would suffer from twitches and sudden loss of bowel control at public functions, a syndrome which would become known as Abbott's revenge. But at least he was in control of a body, most of the time. After several years and three hearings, fairy warlocks would manage to rehouse Abbott's consciousness in a lower life form, a guinea pig, to be precise. The guinea pig's own consciousness was soon subjugated by Abbott's. Warlock interns would often amuse themselves by throwing tiny swords into the pig's pen and crack up watching the little piggy trying to pick them up. Quefor blinked Abbott's eyes.
Thanks, number one, he said, placing the smaller warlock on the ground. He's always been too strong for me, but now he's gone. I'm free!
Quefor studied his new arms.
And I have muscles!
Holly lowered her gun, resting a hand on her thigh.
That must be it. Surely our troubles are over.
Artemis felt the earth tilt a fraction below them. He dropped to one knee, laying the flat of his hands on the ground.
I hate to say this, Holly, but I think we're sinking.
The sinking thing turned out to be not as serious as it sounded. Of course, it was serious. After all, an island was sinking, but there was help at hand. Holly realised this when her barely functional earpiece suddenly flooded with crackling LEP chatter.
The sky is a projection, she thought. They're waiting for us.
Suddenly, where there had been nothing, hundreds of fairy vehicles suddenly appeared in the air above the island. Emergency services air ambulances flew in decreasing circles, searching for landing spots. Huge demolition platforms were guided down by tug pods, and an LEP shuttle dropped straight into the volcano. The pod had the slick lines of a teardrop and a non-reflective surface that made it difficult to see, even with a shield powered down.
They were expecting us, said Artemis, unsurprised.
I thought as much. Number One sneezed.
Oh, thank goodness, I'm so fed up of this volcano. It's going to take a month to get this crater stink out of my plates.
No, no, said Quan, linking his new apprentice. You can vent your pores magically. It's a very handy talent.
Holly waved her arms to attract the shuttle, though there was no need. The carrier's scanners would have already scanned, categorized, and checked the LEP database for a match for each one of them. The shuttle spun and reversed down to them tail first. Its jets blasted moving furrows in the ash.
Wow, said Quan. Those ships are fabulous. The people have been busy.
A lot has happened in 10,000 years, said Holly, holding up her palms to show the pilot she was not holding a weapon. Again, probably not necessary, but with Ark Sul in command of the LEP, nothing could be taken for granted. Four grappler hooks shot from the corners of the shuttle, smashing through the crater crust into the rock below. Once they had a solid grip, they reeled the craft in for a landing. The rear door slid across, and Foley came trotting down the ramp, dressed in a custom-tailored four-legged LEP jumpsuit. He skidded down the incline to Holly, digging his back hooves through the crust.
Holly,
he said, hugging her tightly.
You made it back. I knew you would.
Holly hugged the centaur back.
And I knew you'd be here waiting.
Foley reached an arm round Artemis's shoulders.
Well, when Artemis Fowl says he'll be back, you know it's going to take a lot more than space and time to stop him.
Foley shook hands with Number One and Quan.
I see you brought quite a few guests.
Holly smiled, her teeth white against a face of streaked ash.
Hundreds. Anyone we need to worry about?
No, a few have been mesmerized, but a couple of sessions in therapy should straighten that.
Okay, I'll pass it on, said the centaur.
Now, we have to cut this reunion short and board immediately. We have 30 minutes to sink this island and pack up this entire facility.
Facility? Thought Artemis. They've had time to set up a facility. Just how long have we been away?
They climbed the ramp and strapped themselves into gel-padded bucket seats in the sparsely furnished rear. There were no comforts here, just seats and gun racks. A medic fairy scanned them all in turn, then shot a cocktail of inoculations and germ killers into their arms, just in case Hybris had brewed up any mutant diseases over the past 10,000 years. A true professional, the medic did not bat an eye examining Quan and Number One, even though he'd never met their like before. Foley sat beside Holly.
I can't tell you how good it feels to see you, Holly. I requested this assignment. I'm on leave from Section 8. This entire facility is my design. Biggest single project I ever worked on. Designed for a 30-minute walk away. I knew you'd make it back.
Holly thought about that statement for a moment.
She was an assignment.
The shuttle reeled in the grippers and peeled away from the crater wall. In seconds, they breached the mouth like a bullet from a gun. The vibration was enough to rattle teeth for the first few seconds. Then the stabilization fins snicked out the side and calmed the ride down.
I'm glad to see the end of that volcano, said Number One, trying to appear casual, even though he was flying around in a metal teardrop.
After all, this was not his first flight. Foley laid the heel of his hand on the porthole rim, peering downwards.
You really are seeing the last of it.
As soon as we have everybody off the island, those demolition rigs are going to turn the laser cutters on it. We're going to slice it up and then remote deflate the buoys underneath.
Let it down slow. That way, no tidal waves.
The water displacement alone was enough to send a few big rollers in towards Dublin, but we bored them up from space. Once the island is down, we can pack up the shield and go home.
Oh, said Number One, who hadn't understood much of what had been said. Artemis looked out of the porthole at his elbow. On the island below, demons were being guided into shuttles by rescue teams. Once the crafts took off, they switched on their shields and shimmered from view.
You gave us quite a scare, Ollie, laughed Foley, coming back 20 miles off target like that. We had to light a fire under our pilots to get over here and get the projection up. Luckily, it's early in the morning and the tide is low. We've got half an hour before the first fishing boats get out here.
I see, said Holly slowly. Big budget stuff. Saul must have been spitting fire.
Foley snorted.
So? Well, he can spit what he wants out of whatever end he wants. He got jammed out of the force a couple of years ago. Do you realise that traitor wanted to let the entire 8 family die off? The moron actually said as much in a memo. Holly gripped the arms of her seat. A couple of years ago? How long have we been gone? Foley snapped his fingers. Yeah. I wasn't supposed to just blurt it out. Sorry. I mean, it's not serious, like 1,000 years or anything. How long, Foley? Demanded Holly. The centaur thought about it for a moment. Okay. You've been gone for nearly 3 years. Quan reached over and slapped Artemis's shoulder. 3 years. Nice going, Mud Boy. You must have one hell of a brain to get us that close. I wasn't expecting to see this side of the century. Artemis was stunned. 3 years. His parents hadn't seen him for 3 years. What torture had he put them through? How could he ever make up for it? Foley was trying to fill the shocked silence with information. Malchus kept the PI firm ticking over. Well, more than that, actually, it's thriving. He signed up a new partner. You'll never guess who. Doodah Day, another criminal turned do-gooder. Wait till he hears your back. He calls me every day. I have a pain in my tail trying to explain quantum physics to that dwarf. Holly reached across and took Artemis's hand. There's only one way to look at this, Artemis. Think of all the lives you've saved. That's worth a few years, surely. Artemis could only stare straight ahead. Dying in the transfer would have been a grade one disaster. This was surely a grade two. What could he say? How could he explain himself? I need to get home, he said, sounding for once like an actual 14-year-old. Foley, would you tell the pilot where I live? The centaur chuckled. Like every law enforcement agent under the world doesn't know where Artemis Fowl lives. Anyway, no need to go that far. Someone's waiting for you on shore. He's been there for quite a while. Artemis placed his forehead against the porthole. He felt so tired suddenly, as though he had actually been awake for 3 years. How could he even begin to explain events to his parents? He knew how they must be feeling, exactly how he felt when his father had gone missing. Perhaps he had already been declared dead, as his father had been. And even though his return would bring happiness, that pain would always be there, underneath the surface. Foley was talking to the demons. Who's a little guy? He asked, tickling number one under the chin.
That little guy is number one, said Quan. He's the most powerful warlock on the planet. He could fry your brain by accident, say if you were tickling him under the chin, and he got irritated.
The centaur withdrew his finger, sharpish.
I see. I like him. We're going to get along just fine.
Why are you called number one? Is that a nickname? Number one felt the magic inside him, comfortable, like heated veins.
It was my imp name, but now I think I'll keep it.
Quan was surprised.
What? You don't want the QW name? That's traditional. We haven't had a quandary in a while. What about QWERTY?
Number one shook his head.
I'm number one. The name used to mark me out as different. Now it makes me unique. I have no idea where we are or where we're going, but I already feel more at home than I ever have.
Foley rolled his eyes.
Excuse me while I get a tissue.
Honestly, I thought you demons were warlike and stoic. This little guy sounds like one of those cheap romance novels.
The little guy who could fry your brain,
Quan reminded him.
One of those cheap romance novels that I happen to adore, said Foley, backing away slowly.
Number one smiled contentedly. He was alive, and he had helped to save the island. Finally, he knew his place in the universe. Now that Abbott was taken care of, he could live his life the way he wanted to. The first thing he would do when things had settled down would be to track down the demoness with the red markings, very much like his own, and see if maybe she would share a meal with him. A cooked meal. It could be that they had a lot to talk about. The shuttle slipped through the shield into the morning sky. The jagged rocks of the Irish coast jutted out from waves, sun-speckled by the early light. It was going to be a fine day. There were trace clouds to the north, but nothing that could keep people inside for long. There was a group of houses clustered around an inlet, and in the Horseshoe Harbour, fishermen were already on the sand, setting up their nets.
This is your stop, Artemis,
said Foley. We'll drop you behind the key wall. I'll give you a call in a few days for debriefing. The centaur reached out a hand, laying it on Artemis's shoulder. The people thank you for your efforts, but you know that everything you have learned is confidential. Not even your parents, Artemis. You'll have to think of something besides the truth to tell them.
Of course, said Artemis.
Good. I didn't have to say it, I know. Anyway, the man you want is in the little cottage with the window boxes. Say hello from me. Artemis nodded numbly.
I will.
The pilot swung in low, tucking the shuttle out of sight behind a deserted, ramshackle stone building. When he was certain that there was nobody in the sight lines, the pilot hit a green light over the rear door. Holly helped Artemis out of his chair.
We never get to hang out, she said.
Artemis half chuckled.
I know, there's always a crisis.
If it's not goblin gangs, it's time-travelling demons. Holly kissed him on the cheek. That was probably dangerous, you being a pubescent volcano.
I've got it under control.
Just about. Holly pointed to her new blue eye.
We'll always be a part of each other now.
Artemis tapped the cheek below his fairy hazel eye.
I'll keep an eye out for you.
Was that a joke?
My goodness, you are changing.
Artemis was a little dazed. Well, apparently I'm almost 18.
God help us all. Artemis Fowl, eligible to vote.
Artemis chuckled. I've been voting for years. He tapped his ring phone. Call you later.
I have a feeling we'll have a lot to talk about.
They hugged briefly, but tightly. Then Artemis walked down the ramp. He took 3 steps and looked back, but there was nothing there but sea and sky.
Artemis Fowl made for strange early morning viewing in the village of Duncade. A lone teenager in a tattered suit, leaving a trail of ash behind him as he climbed through a stone stile and half stumbled along the quayfront. There was a small group ahead of him, leaning on a concrete bollard. One shaggily bearded fisherman was telling a wild story about a 6-meter wave he had seen during the night, which had simply evaporated before it reached the shore. He told the story well, complete with big arm gestures and whooshing noises. The other men nodded to his face, while behind his back, winking and making drinky-drinky motions with their hands. Artemis ignored them, walking further down the quay front to the cottage with the window boxes.
Window boxes? Who would have thought?
There was a keypad on the door. It looked out of place in such a rustic setting, but Artemis would have expected no less. He keyed in his own birthday, 0109, deactivating the lock and interior alarm. It was dark inside. Curtains drawn, lights off. Artemis stepped inside to a Spartan living area with a functional kitchen, 1 chair and a sturdy wooden table. There was no television, but rudimentary shelves had been erected to store hundreds of books on various subjects. As Artemis's eyes adjusted to the gloom, he could make out some of the titles. Gormenghast, The Art of War, and Gone with the Wind being among them.
You are full of surprises, old friend, murmured Artemis, reaching out to touch the spine of Moby Dick.
As he traced the embossed title, a small red dot of light appeared on his fingertip.
You know what that is, said a low, rumbling voice behind him. If thunder could speak, then this would be its voice.
Artemis nodded. There was no time for outbursts or sudden moves.
Good. Then you know what happens if you do anything to upset me.
Another nod.
Excellent. You're doing very well. Now, lace your fingers behind your head and turn round.
Artemis did as he was told, and found himself facing a huge man with a full beard and long hair drawn back in a ponytail. Both were flecked with grey. The man's face was familiar but different. There were more lines around his eyes and a deep frown slashed between them.
Butler, said Artemis, are you behind all that hair?
Butler stepped back as though struck. His eyes widened and he swallowed rapidly, suddenly parched.
Artemis, is it? You're the wrong age. I always thought...
The time tunnel, old friend, explained Artemis. I saw you only yesterday.
Butler was not yet convinced. He moved quickly to the curtains and in his haste pulled them, rail and all, away from the wall. The red light of sunrise flooded the small room. Butler turned to his young guest and took the boy's face in his hands. With massive thumbs, he wiped the grime from around Artemis's eyes. What he saw in those eyes almost buckled his knees.
Artemis, it is you. I had begun to think...
No, I knew you'd come back.
And then again with more belief.
I knew it! I always knew it!
The bodyguard wrapped Artemis in arms strong enough to break a bear's back. Artemis could have sworn he heard sobs, but when Butler released him, he was his usual stoic self.
Sorry about the beard and the hair, Artemis. I was blending in with the natives. How was your, trip?
Artemis felt the sting of tears in his own eyes.
Eventful. If it hadn't been for Holly, we would never have made it.
Butler studied Artemis's face.
Something is different. My God, your eyes!
Oh, yes. I have one of Holly's now. It's complicated.
Butler nodded. We can swap stories later. There are calls to be made.
Calls? Said Artemis. More than one.
Butler plucked a cordless phone from its cradle. There are your parents, of course, but I should call Minerva too. Artemis was surprised. Pleasantly so.
Minerva?
Yes, she's been over here several times. Almost every school holiday, in fact. We've become good friends. She's the one who started me reading fiction.
I see.
Butler pointed the phone aerial at Artemis.
It's Artemis this and Artemis that. She really has built you up to be something special. You're going to have to work hard not to disappoint her.
Artemis swallowed. He had been hoping for a break, not more challenges.
Of course she's grown up a bit, even if you haven't, continued Butler.
And quite the beauty.
Sharp as a samurai sword, too. There's a young lady who could give you a run for your money at chess.
Then again, thought Artemis, nothing like a challenge to keep your brain active. But that would come later.
My parents?
Just missed them. They were here yesterday for the weekend. They stay in the local guest house whenever they can.
Butler laid a hand on Artemis's shoulder. These last few years, that's been terrible for them. I told them everything, Artemis. I had to.
Do they believe you?
Butler shrugged. Some days they do. Mostly my fairy stories just add to their pain. They think I've been driven mad with guilt. And even though you're back, things will never be the same again. It'll take a miracle to erase my stories and their suffering.
Artemis nodded slowly.
A miracle.
He lifted his hand. On the palm, there was a slight graze from his climb over the quayside stile. Artemis concentrated, and five blue sparks of magic leaped from his fingertips and zeroed in on the graze, wiping it out like a cloth wiping dirt. He had more magic left than he had pretended.
Maybe we can arrange a miracle.
Butler was beyond further amazement.
That's a new trick, he said laconically.
I picked up a little more than an eye in the time tunnel.
I see, said Butler. Just don't do it around the twins.
Don't worry, said Artemis. I won't.
Then his brain computed what Butler had actually said.
What twins?
Butler punched in the Foul Manor phone number, smiling. Maybe time stood still for you, big brother. But it didn't for the rest of us.
Artemis stumbled to the room's only chair and sank into it.
Big brother, he thought. And then, twins?